Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast with Pastor Robert Thibodeau. Using an interview format, Pastor Bob will introduce you to men and women whose ministries are impacting this world with the gospel, and will also provide commentary and insight on end-time prophetic events we now see happening in the news. Now here is Pastor Robert Thibodeau.
Hello, everyone, everywhere. Pastor Robert Thibodeau here. Welcome to the Kingdom Crossroads Podcast today. You know, we've all experienced a lot of new things during this past year due to COVID-19. I mean, who would have ever thought you could walk into a bank or a store with your face covered by a mask and nobody would think twice about it, right? But we have had to adopt to this strange change in dynamics, and many people are looking at the benefits. Many more are looking beyond the hype and at how all of these changes are truly affecting our societal psyche. Maybe we should get beyond the hype and just start to get back to enjoying life like we did pre-COVID, right? Well, my guest today is sparking some thoughts along those very lines. Dr. Andy Lazarus is a physician board certified in internal medicine with over 25 years of experience in primary care, internal medicine, and geriatrics. He has a certified medical director degree and is the director of several long-term care facilities in Howard County and beyond. In addition to his numerous degrees and awards, he is an active marathon runner. Man, I miss those days. A triathlete. He's published several books on medical care, but he's an avid fiction writer as well. And he just released his latest book, The Geriatrics Vengeance Club in the Era of COVID. Dr. Lazarus, who's been on the front line, having treated hundreds of his patients with COVID, he believes that the way in which our medical community and public health officials chose to handle COVID-19 basically is tragic. He said that the biggest problem is that we based our policy on fear and ritual, draping it in a veil of fake science. Then we compounded the error by allowing only a select group of scientists to talk about it on TV, essentially silencing everyone else. The amazing part of his stance is that he's a progressive, not a conservative. Amen. Help me welcome to the program, Dr. Andy Lazarus. Dr. Lazarus, thank you so much for taking time from your busy schedule to join us today.
Oh, thank you. It's such a pleasure being here, and thanks for all you do.
Amen. Now, the first question I always start with, other than that brief bit of information I just shared, can you tell us in your own words, who is Dr. Andy Lazarus?
I'm someone who is skeptical of many things in the medical world. I've been, like I said, a doctor for about 30 years. When I went to college, I was a history major. History is still my passion. I read history constantly. And a lot of the lessons we should be learning about COVID and everything else comes from history. True. We don't want to repeat mistakes that we know are tragic. And part of my fear of how we responded to COVID came from that part of me. And I'm also very imbued with science. I'm opposed to what I call snake oils. You know, a lot of the medical system is predicated on the fact that we trick people. We make them think that unless they do exactly what we say, they're going to die tomorrow. Most of that comes into drugs and procedures and other things that, you know, they're benefiting from, obviously. But that fear, the first word in my book is fear, because I think fear is the most dangerous thing that anyone could imbue in society. Yeah. When we see historically societies that have gone bad, it's because of fear, because someone is scaring you to death, so you're willing to give up your rights and basically give up your common sense and submit to these people who are so-called authorities. And again, history teaches us so many lessons about this. When COVID hit, I smelt all of it coming again. Yeah. I was shocked by how compliant everyone became to what Dr. Fauci and others were saying that I knew was clearly not true. I've read the science. I've written a nonfiction book about it, looking at the science, and yet no one cared. It was just all about doing these ritualistic things and ignoring the people who really needed our help. So there's a double tragedy here. We have caused the death rate of COVID to go higher because we've ignored the people who we know are at highest risk, but we've also killed and maimed so many people from this cure. And look, we're human beings. You know, we're used to hugs and we're used to compassion and we're used to congregating together. We need all that. And it's been taken away from us. And the implications, the ramifications from that are yet to be seen. They're going to be horrible. That's why I wrote this book. So a lot of the things I wrote this book starting in about May of last year. Okay. Did a chapter a week as a way to vent, way to put my thoughts together. A lot of the ideas I had in the book were written based on the time I was writing it. So, mm-hmm. People could say to me, well, sure, now looking back a year, you're saying we did everything wrong. Well, I've been saying this for a year, and I'm not a lone voice here. Other people have been saying it too, but they've been marginalized, excluded from society. That there are 20,000 doctors, highest levels, who wrote a petition about it called the Great Barrington Petition, saying we did this all wrong. We have to be more selective. We have to open up the quarantine. They don't get on CNN. People you're watching are guys who have a very strict interpretation of how they want to deal with this, which is to scare you to death and to drape you with a lot of mythical cures and prevent you from living your life. And I've watched it on the front lines, like you said, and I've watched it from a societal level, and it's just been disturbing.
Amen. Yeah, and I like one euphemism you use, Fauciism. Is more dangerous to Americans than COVID itself. Explain what you mean by that.
Well, it's Faucism because, again, during the 30s, we had fascism, and the whole notion of fascism, which, by the way, was popular in this country too, was that, you follow an authority figure and do what they say. And no matter how many lies they spin, you're going to keep following that authority figure. So just because Fauci says it, everyone believes it. You don't see Dr. Fauci on CNN ever getting cross-examined or questioned. They're saying, Dr. Fauci, what do we do? What should we fear? Whatever he says is just fact, based on the fact that he is basically one of those leaders that is supposed to be a godlike figure. And unfortunately, we've seen this act before. And it reminds me so much of fascism. Look, Albert Einstein, who lived through the fascist times in Germany, came to this country, and he had to live through the McCarthy hearings, and he just was physically ill from it. He said, I see this all happening again. It's another form of fascism. We're listening to this guy. We're going to believe everything he says. We don't need evidence. And he didn't think it would ever go away. He thought we were going destined to do that. So it's not like this is the first time this happened in this country, but yeah, this is that kind of thing. And that's why I use the word I'm surprised other people haven't used it, but yeah, Fauciism, it came to mind because I said, wow, here's this charismatic leader, and he could tell you to wear a mask on your legs and everyone's going to be doing it. No, mm-hmm. No one has any questions. He says it, it's gospel and scary. Scary when you, amen, when you wrap that in science and say it's true.
I remember it was at the time of this recording, it's probably a month or so ago, he came out and said, we should wear two masks. Yeah, remember that?
Double masking, right? Yeah. Based on what, right? There's nothing based on, but now all of a sudden everyone's doing it. I have in my book, I have a lot of songs, which again, I wrote. I'm not a songwriter, but this was my therapy. I had other people sing them, but I have one song called Just Wear Masks. And that's one of the lines in it, when he goes with the double masks.
Yeah.
And basically the line is, we're doing this. We know it doesn't work. That's what the singer says. But people feel like they're safer, and really isn't that what it's all about? So, it's just it's a grand deception. The mask studies are very, very compelling and definitive. And we've had several of them. But more to the point of the masks, it's interesting. I take care of long-term care people. I've taken care of hundreds of people with COVID. Most of them do just fine. They're the ones not supposed to do fine, but they do. But every one of them was infected by someone wearing a mask. And when we look in long-term care, which has had strict enforced mask laws for a year now, that's where most of the deaths are. So people are wearing the masks and everyone's getting sick. And when I say that to some of the facility directors, they say, well, I guess they're not wearing them right. We got to watch out. It's just people aren't letting this drop. They're so convinced. I said, look in front of you. You just had 50 new cases and everyone's wearing mask, gown, shields. Well, we got to work on how they're wearing those shields. No one will let it go. So we end up perpetuating this policy that is completely deceptive and ineffective, whereas we could have done so much more to help people who needed help. And that's the tragedy of it is, but anytime you go with a deceptive policy and listen to someone without questioning them, anytime you go away from science and go away from basically what makes us human, and not care about that, then you're going to do more damage than good. And that's what we've seen here.
I mean, and the truly vulnerable, you say they were neglected even more. How do you see this failure and how this aspect of our society was neglected?
Yeah, there are two groups, essentially, I think, were neglected. And again, when this all came out and Dr. Fauci was talking about all this, he first said, don't wear masks, then wear masks, it's not going to hurt, all this stuff. He never focused on these two groups. So one group are the people in the inner city. They got hit really hard, especially at the beginning. Everyone said New York, New York, New York. Well, it was really three neighborhoods in New York with very poor people. They lack health insurance. A lot of them are obese, have terrible diabetes. And they got hit really hard because that kind of group gets hit hard. And the second group are people in long-term care. If you remove people from long-term care in the equation, the death rate of COVID is 1 out of 2,000. And the death rate of flu is 1 out of 1,000. So it's actually safer than flu when you take away these vulnerable populations. Knowing that, which we did, Italy published papers on it before COVID even hit our country, we should have had a policy that focused on these groups. And been aware enough that we could leave everyone else alone. We could keep society open, let people to continue to go to football games, churches, schools, everything, be with their families, go to holidays, and focus on these groups. How do we focus on these groups? We could have done many things for the elderly, especially, such as daily testing. So everyone who walks in a long-term care facility would get tested every single day, one of these rapid tests. Which we could have in this country, we still not doing that. But the technology has been available for at least 10 months now. Yeah. So you test everyone walking in, then they could see their families, then they could congregate, then they could socialize. All the nurses and aides who come in and me, we'll be safe because we've been tested. So we don't have to wear these masks, which no elderly people cannot hear us. They want to see our face. They want to hug us. You know, this is what makes us human beings.
Amen.
And so we could have done all that and we could have accepted too that the damage we're doing to elderly people by locking them up and by forcing them to not exercise, not socialize, not see their family and be confronted by fear every single day. Because that's what we're doing when we're wearing all this stuff. We're scaring them to death. It is going to kill them. And it has. The deaths I've seen in my long-term care group have been more this year than any year by far, and very few of them were from COVID. I've lost some of my favorite patients who have just been pleasant and happy, and I've just watched misery overtake everybody, fear overtake everybody. And nobody in the health department or Dr. Fauci's crowd cares about this. To them, it's all counting COVID cases. So yeah, that's part of the equation that we could have done from day one, and we could have address these vulnerable populations, not just to help prevent COVID from hitting them, which we didn't do, but also to realize that we can't lock them up. Like in inner cities, we could have easily realized that people have to work. They're going to go to work. They're going to go on the subway. So we could have taken a lot of our resources and thrown them at that and say, look, we're going to pay you not to go to work for the next 2 months and see what happens. Rather than doing these $1 trillion bailout bills to big corporations, we could have easily put that money where we knew the problem was.
Yeah.
And help human beings to live and not be feared. Look, they had to go to work. So what are you gonna do? So they're spreading it everywhere. So we knew that. So our policy was based on a lot of myth and not a lot of compassion at all.
And you know, that's the social economic area of it, but you know, just the isolationism, you know, the quarantine. The damage that did to society. I mean, you know, my wife and I, you know, when all this was in its heyday last spring, you know, she would still make food for the grandkids and stuff, but you know, we'd put it on the porch outside, then they come up to the porch and get it, and we'd wave through the window. I want to hug my grandkids.
Yeah. You want to be with them. Yeah, you want, and you can, and that's the problem is, you know, we could give people one of my favorite authors who writes a lot about this named Vinny Prasad, who's much more conventional than I am. But he wrote that the job of the public health agency is to educate and empower, not to imprison. And what this has done is basically imprisoned people and told them, again, there's one right answer. You better do it. And often that one right answer, which is wearing masks in a store and going down one way aisles, is in a, it's ridiculous. It's like I've gone down the one way aisle wrong, and people are staring at me. So I turn around and kind of walk backwards. I can still go the direction I want to go, but it's this insanity of it. People wearing masks outside on a path with the wind blowing. I'm like in a car alone, people wearing masks on a bicycle, but they're not wearing a helmet. I've had people wearing masks and smoke. They're pulling down the masks and smoking. You know, the insanity of what we've all been willing to accept and what we're willing to give up. We've given up our rights to assemble, our rights to enjoy our lives, to be humans, to be with our families. In my neighborhood, before Thanksgiving, the health department sent out an alert on the phone. You know, the phone starts beeping like a nuclear warhead's about to hit. And you probably got this alert, but it said, if you witness anyone gathering at Thanksgiving, please call the health department immediately. Yeah. That's not a fascist society. I don't know what it is. But again, people have a right. And this guy, Vinny Prasad, wrote an article about that. He said, look, people have a right to gather. They understand the risks. What we should do as a society is tell them how to do it as safely as possible. Not to scare them and to deny our humanity. You know, hopefully we will get out of this and stop hiding behind masks and stop being afraid of each other. Look, when I go running, we talked about running. I run down, Columbia has these wonderful paths. Mm-hmm. And I've gone in these parks called Patapsco Park, which are just beautiful. People, when I come close, they pull a mask up and they grab a tree. I mean, I literally can't live in a world like that. You know, it's not who we are as human beings. You know, we have to be able to look at each other, not be scared of each other, especially
when this started. I guess it's probably right after they shut down. So that'd be like March of last year. And, you know, I would go to the grocery store and I'd leave my wife home because she has some underlying health conditions. So I would go to do the grocery shopping. And I remember one time I walked in and, you know how people are, they're, you know, just taking their time and, you know, they got everything narrowed up so you can't do. And I'm waiting for, you know, had one going this way, one going that way. And then both of them are stopped looking at the opposite shelves. So I'm like stuck there. Right. And I just cleared my throat. And both of them went, bam, up against the aisles and let me go through. I'm like, oh, wow, okay, this will work. I know how to get through these aisles now.
It does give you some power, that's for sure. I mean, if you sneeze or cough, everyone runs away now.
So exactly, back up.
People. people are afraid of other people now. And you know, I get it. The fear is just so thick in the air. But really, we should be together and helping each other. We shouldn't be afraid of each other, not in that kind of situation.
Well, how do you think the media has perpetuated the pandemic?
They are another enemy number one for sure. And first of all, if you look at the, look at CNN. I have a song about CNN in my book too, and I do come down hard on them. They got this death toll, you know, going every day. How many people got cases? They could do that with smoking or heart disease or all sorts of other things. More people die of those things every day. But they've focused on also the younger people who die of COVID. And by the way, the young deaths are much more rare than they are of other things. More young people die of other things. You know, in Japan, they found the increased incidence of suicide, for instance, just this year, is far exceeds the COVID death rate total in their country. Yeah. So young people are dying more now of other things because of our quarantine, not because of COVID, but that's not what CNN portrays it as. They will show that case of a young person and say, you see, everyone needs to be scared. And they invite people on who are only following a certain script. Again, it's the Fauci script. They bring on Fauci as this god. Everyone else, they bring on these epidemiologists who are scaring people by they build these things called models, medical models. If you want to read a good book on this, it's called Weapons of Math Destruction, written by a Wall Street mathematician, saying how these models, when they're used inappropriately, which is to predict the future, they lead to catastrophe in many areas. So they build these models, and every model starts with three words, if we assume. So they make these assumptions, throw them in these models, and explode these. Like 2 million people are going to die unless everyone holds their head. And you know, And those are the guys who go on the media. Because, again, CNN has never done better than it's doing now. And it's loving this stuff. So it is triggering the fear. It invites people on who say, look, there are variants and, you know, they're going to kill everyone. It's only going to get worse before it gets better. You know, and so what's the common person going to think when all these great academic doctors are coming on saying this? But again, CNN, there are tens of thousands of people who are saying just the opposite. Mm-hmm. And they're not invited on these media shows. So that's the problem with the media. It's always been the problem with the media. It's nothing new.
Oh, yeah. They each network has their own little sense of morality, I guess you could say.
And whatever to it. Yeah, whatever gives them the biggest audience is what they're going to do. And fear gives you an audience. So they love that.
What do you think it will take for us to get back to some sense of normalcy? Or do you think we're now living in the new normal?
No, this is not the new normal. I you know, one thing about writing the book is I got to end it how I wanted to end it. it ends very happily because vengeance in this book is not awful like it sounds. Vengeance is a way to cope with a society that's trying to take away who you are, mm-hmm. trying to take away, you know, your inner being. And rather than, and you'll, if you try to attack that society directly, you're going to lose every time. And the main character, through the guidance of his older patients who have lived with this kind of stuff all their life, right? Their authority and dignity and autonomy is always being taken away. They mm-hmm. teach him this vengeance, which is how we can live our lives amidst this insanity. We've done this very often. In my book, the way it ends, I say Americans in the end needed hugs and handshakes and football and Thanksgiving, and they were done. You know, they ended it. Now, you could look at places like Texas where they got rid of the masks and everyone's doing just fine. People are looking at that, right? They're looking at that and they're saying, and then you even have people in President Biden's President Biden's COVID task force. Like there's someone named Dr. Gottlieb who's saying, look, given the fact that 60% of this country has already had COVID, and that if we get immunized 10 or 15% more, we got herd immunity. We're good. We could stop all this. And Dr. Fauci comes out and says, no, you can't. It's just going to get worse. People are going to start listening to the people who are, again, more reasonable, because everyone wants this to end. So as long as those voices are heard and we realize that scientifically we don't have to keep doing this, I think people will feel a little better. But I do think that's going to happen this summer. Of course, I said that last summer, so don't use me as a prognosticator.
I told my wife, I said, you know, they're going to say, okay, it's starting to, you know, settle down. Oh, now here's fall, and that's flu season, so we need to keep this going until next spring now.
You know? They could say that, right? So it's a matter of how many people are going to listen to them. Yeah. Our governor has been quick to listen to everyone who tells you to close everything down. Yeah. So, you know, whether that's going to change, I don't know. A lot of governors have done that. And again, the rates of death in their states are no better than in states that are more relaxed. So I think people are going to see that and realize, you know, and Europe is shut. Europe shuts down. We're not Europe. You know, we don't follow what they do. We're a much more libertarian country. People make their own choices here. People don't like Big Brother telling them what to do. People don't like to be shut out. Look, we've taken away all these liberties for a year. Yeah. And people in this country don't do well with that. Ultimately, the fear-mongering, I think, is going to wither. Not in my neighborhood, where people are wearing masks in their car. You know, that they're going to keep doing that. But I think in society in general, we're going to see a lot more relaxing just because of that, because we're Americans. I think humanity is going to overtake everything eventually.
Amen. Hey, folks, Pastor Bob here. We're all out of time for this portion of a great interview with Dr. Andy Lazarus. As we've been discussing the COVID-19 crisis, the government response, and how that has negatively affected society as a whole, Dr. Lazarus' information is exactly what many experts have claimed all along, that the government response was poorly planned, poorly executed, and really not even needed. Because of that, our economy has suffered, our community relationships have suffered, our own mental health has suffered. But folks, we can recover. Amen. I urge you to order your copy of Dr. Andy Lazarus' book, The Geriatrics Vengeance Club in the Era of COVID.
Although this is a fictional book, the information inside is absolutely 100% spot on as far as storytelling of the effects that we've all suffered in this pandemic. You need this book. I absolutely mean it. You need this book. It's like watching an interesting television program, if I could relate it to that. It's something that will provide you with information while allowing your brain just to take a break from being inundated with negative information like we have been this past year. Go down to the show notes, click the link, order your copy today, and be sure to go to Dr. Lazar's website. Take a look around. I've also included the links to some of his other books, and I recommend them as well. Be sure to come back for the conclusion of this interview with Dr. Andy Lazarus as we dive into a deep discussion of his book, The Geriatrics Vengeance Club in the Era of COVID. Till then, this is Pastor Bob reminding you, be blessed in all that you do.
Are you a Christian entrepreneur, coach, or author with a message that needs to be heard? Picture this: your voice reaching thousands, your story inspiring hearts, and your business flourishing like never before. Introducing Faithcasters, the ultimate platform that connects faith-driven professionals like you with the power of podcasting. Become a sought-after guest on faith-based podcasts. Share your unique insights and connect with like-minded individuals who share your passion for faith and entrepreneurship as well. Imagine your expertise reaching a wider audience, expanding your network, and propelling your business to new heights. Well, it's all within reach with Faithcasters. So don't wait. Take the first step today on your journey to greatness by visiting our website at faithcaster.org. That's faithcaster.org. Join the Faithcasters community now and unleash the full potential of your faith-driven enterprise. You do not want to miss this opportunity. Faithcasters, where faith meets podcasting and your dreams become reality. Visit faithcaster.org. Let's soar together. And remember, anyone can be a podcaster, but only a Christian can become a faithcaster. Faithcasters, your voice, your platform, your success.